slowly the sheets were fed in. After each one came the interval of the queerly whispery chuckling noise that was the brain in action. Then the silence that meant readiness for another sheet. It was a matter of hours, during which the equivalent of something like 17 fat volumes of mathematical physics were fed into the brain. As the process went on, frowns appeared and deepened. Lanning muttered ferociously under his breath. Bogart first gazed speculatively at his fingernails, and then bit at them in abstracted fashion. It was when the last of the thick pile of sheets disappeared that Calvin, white-faced, said, "Something's wrong." Lanning barely got the words out. "It can't be. Is it dead?" "Brain?" Susan Calvin was trembling. "Do you hear me, brain?" "Huh?" came the abstracted rejoinder. "Do you want me?" "The solution." "Oh, that. I can do it. I'll build you a whole ship, just as easy. If you let me have the robots. A nice ship. It'll take 2 months, maybe." "There was no difficulty?" "It took long to figure," said the brain. Dr. Calvin backed away. The color had not returned to her thin cheeks. She motioned the others away. In her office, she said, "I can't understand it. The information as given must involve a dilemma. Probably involves death. If something has gone wrong." Bogart said quietly, "The machine talks and makes sense. It can't be a dilemma." But the psychologist replied urgently, "There are dilemmas and dilemmas. There are different forms of escape. Suppose the brain is only mildly caught, just badly enough, say, to be suffering from the delusion that he can solve the problem when he can't. Or suppose it's teetering on the brink of something really bad, so that any small push shoves it over." "Suppose," said Lanning, "there is no dilemma. Suppose Consolidated's machine broke down over a different question, or broke down for purely mechanical reasons." "But even so," insisted Calvin, "we couldn't take chances. Listen, from now on, no one is to as much as breathe to the brain. I'm taking over." "All right," sighed Lanning. "Take over, then. And meanwhile, we'll let the brain build its ship. And if it does build it, we'll have to test it." He was ruminating. "We'll need our top field men for that." Michael Donovan brushed down his red hair with a violent motion of his hand and a total indifference to the fact that the unruly mass sprang to attention again immediately. He said, "Call the turn now, Greg. They say the ship is finished. They don't know what it is, but it's finished. Let's go, Greg. Let's grab the controls right now." Powell said wearily, "Cut it, Mike. There's a peculiar overripe flavor to your humor at its freshest, and the confined atmosphere here isn't helping it." "Well, listen." Donovan took another ineffectual swipe at his hair. "I'm not worried so much about our cast iron genius and his tin ship. There's the matter of my lost leave. And the monotony. There's nothing here but whiskers and figures. The wrong kind of figures. Oh, why do they give us these jobs?" "Because," replied Powell gently, "we're no loss if they lose us." "Okay, relax. Doc Lanning's coming this way." Lanning was coming, his gray eyebrows as lavish as ever, his aged figure unbent as yet and full of life. He walked silently up the ramp with the two men and out into the open field where, obeying no human master, silent robots were building a ship. Wrong tense. Had built a ship. For Lanning said, "The robots have stopped. Not one has moved today." "It's completed then?" "Definitely," asked Powell. "Now how can I tell?" Lanning was peevish, and his eyebrows curled down in an eye-hiding frown. "It seems done. There are no spare pieces about, and the interior is down to a gleaming finish." "You've been inside?" "Just in, then out. I'm no space pilot. Either of you two know much about engine theory? Donovan looked at Powell, who looked at Donovan. Donovan said, I've got my license, sir, but at last reading it didn't say anything about hyper-engines or warp navigation. Just the usual child's play in three dimensions. Alfred Lanning looked up with sharp disapproval and snorted the length of his prominent nose. He said frigidly, Well, we have our engine men. Powell caught at his elbow as he walked away. Sir, is the ship still restricted ground? The old director hesitated, then rubbed the bridge of his nose. I suppose not. For you two, anyway. Donovan looked after him as he left and muttered a short, expressive phrase at his back. He turned to Powell. I'd like to give him a literary description of himself, Greg. Suppose you come along, Mike. The inside of the ship was finished as a ship ever was. That could be told in a single eye-blinking glance. No martinet in the system could have put as much spit and polish into a surface as those robots had. The walls were of a gleaming, silvery finish that retained no fingerprints. There were no angles. Walls, floors, and ceiling faded gently into each other, and in the cold, metallic glittering of the hidden lights, one was surrounded by six chilly reflections of one's bewildered self. The main corridor was a narrow tunnel that led in a hard, clatter-footed stretch along a line of rooms of no inter-distinguishing features. Powell said, I suppose furniture is built into the wall. Or maybe we're not supposed to sit or sleep.